Alrighty, guys, welcome back to another episode of the On-Site Inside podcast. I'm your host, Corey Tompkins, and today we have a very, very special guest. We have Caleb Adams, the founder of Pilgrim Homes or Pilgrim Building, developments, you do it all. Caleb, he's going to come here today and he's going to share a bit of insight into him. But man, I want to thank you again for coming on. We had a really, really good chat just before we started recording. But if you want to give our listeners a little bit of insight about you, where you're at, where you started, what you do now, and we'll just start talking, dude.
So, awesome, man. Yeah. Well, yeah, thanks for having me. It's an honor to be here, and just our chat before, inspired by what you guys are doing here. Mm. Like you said, episode 35, that's 35 episodes of you guys
just
going,
grounding and pounding, man.
But yeah, awesome to see it and be part of it. Founder of Pilgrim Homes. Yeah. We've been running, we've just ticked over 5 years. Yeah. And that was, through the COVID journey. Mm. It hasn't been a easy journey, but 5 years in and, we're kicking goals.
Yeah.
Really starting to get some traction now. A bit about my background. I didn't come from a construction background. Mm-hmm. So I did business at uni.
Yeah.
And then I went out and worked for a large strategy consulting company. Mm-hmm. So I did that for 4 years. And around that time, we were moving to Melbourne. And I got the opportunity to work as a general manager for a volume building company. So yep. I got to know the general manager of Impact Homes.
Yep.
That was Queensland's largest builder at the time, doing about 600 or 700 homes a year.
Yeah. Were they doing that at that point in time when you came in, or did you sort of help?
Yeah. So they were doing 600 or 700 at that point.
Yeah.
The goal was to launch this company into Victoria. And I didn't know anything about building or construction at the time.
But business is business.
That's right. Yeah. Well, I thought it was. I got to know the CEO of Impact, and he took a bit of a liking to me and gave me the opportunity to start their business down in Victoria. Mm-hmm. From the first time I met him to when he put me on was about 2 weeks. He sent me a phone and a laptop and said, have a go.
Yeah.
So that was about 2014.
Yeah.
So what are we now? It was about 11 years ago.
Yeah.
So I just gave it a crack. The first year we built 3 homes. Mm-hmm. The second year we built in Victoria.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Queensland's still running.
Queensland's cranking. They had 150 employees in Queensland.
Yeah.
First year we built 3 homes. Second year we built 20 homes. Third year we built 120.
Big growth. Yeah.
And by the time I left there, we were doing 350, 400 homes a year. Massive. That business became big really quickly.
Yeah.
I was learning how to lead and learning how to run a building company and learning how to develop property.
Yeah.
Yeah, all at the same time. So
interesting.
That was good. Do you want me to keep going?
Yeah, man. So talk to us about that transition. So give us a bit of an insight into how long that process took from when you obviously started to when you said you're at that 350 mark. Did you then not exit per se, but did you leave?
Yes. Yeah,
how was that?
I was with Impact that became Privium Homes for about 8 years in total.
Yeah.
Like I said, the first 3 years we went from 0 to 120. Yep. Mm. And along that time we were hiring supervisors and pre-construction guys and development managers.
I'd love to talk to you about this because this is a great little like topic. We'll go back to obviously that, but that whole process of hiring, like were you part of that roadmap of, listen, like resourcing plans and how like, was it rinse and repeat? Were you guys just rinsing and repeating what they did in Queensland? Or was it sort of like uncharted territory almost to a degree?
There was an operating model there, which was a scaled model. Mm. And that's the volume model where one supervisor is looking after between 15 and 25 homes.
Yeah.
A lot of the operation, like the pre-construction and the accounts and admin was still done from head office in Brisbane. Mm-hmm. But the challenge that I had was creating a new path forward in a new state. So adopting their systems and everything to Victorian standards and systems.
And what about subby recruitment and
we had
getting into displays and competing and like
all of it, bro.
Yeah, there's so many little things.
There were so many elements and I hadn't done it before. One of the things I'm not particularly good at any one thing. I can do most things relatively well. And I say that because I'm not a, like a, I don't know construction as well as you do or most of the guys that listen to this podcast. I don't know sales or marketing as well. I don't know the back end systems. But what I do know is that stuff is critically important. And for me, it's always, it's been something that I've wrestled with that there's guys around me that know construction better or know that topic better.
But that's it. You don't need to know everything. You just need to know enough.
That's right. That's
right. And I think if there's a fine line between knowing too much and just knowing enough that you need to know. And I think we're sort of jumping a shit. Like this is probably not really relevant to like a lot of apprentices and stuff. Sure. But as you get higher, like you are obviously in a senior position and people that are in senior positions or you run a large building company or a development company, whatever it is, doesn't matter. Yeah, there comes a point in the road where you're not going to know. Like for me, I don't know all the ins and outs. You shouldn't have to.
Yeah, I think there's part of it where at some point you got to decide you're going to be a generalist or a specialist.
Yeah.
And you got to be okay with either one. If you're going to be a specialist, then you have to absolutely focus and do all of the work you need to do to become the best in the game at whatever that specialty is. Yeah. And that takes commitment. That's not.
And how did you learn that skill?
To be a generalist. Well, what I was going to say before is there's probably an insecurity that I carried for a while that I'm not that crazy good at that, whatever, whether it's construction or whatever. One of the things I realized is I can lead people and I can develop a vision and cast a vision and bring the people together to get behind that vision. My gifting is probably around the leadership side of
That's the hardest job.
But that hasn't come easily either. I've been a student at that. I think whatever you want to get good at, you have to become a student at it. And you have to, I mean, everyone says it, but you have to be genuinely willing to put in the work. And battle the insecurities and be in rooms where there's people much smarter than you at a certain topic.
It's crazy because like for me right now, the journey that I'm on currently is I can resonate with all that. Because when you're trying to manage certain operations, you got accounts, you got so like for me at this point in time, I'm almost looking from everything from above down and I'm just trying to find the bottlenecks and trying to fix what I can, like just trying to move the pieces around to where I can. I'm definitely not a specialist in anything, maybe talking, but Nick was laughing off camera, but yeah, like that's probably it. But in order for everything to run and run smoothly, I sort of need to do that.
And I find as your business scales through different stages, there's times where you're in control of it and times where you're not in control of it. And there's definitely times you can't catch every ball that's in the air. You're going to drop balls like throughout the process, but the importance is knowing at what stage you can let what balls drop. As in, it might be timelines on a project or it might be cost blowouts or whatever the topic is. But the truth is you can't, as a business owner, you can't be across it. I'm aware that not all of this is that relevant to apprentices or whoever the listeners are, it's good to give them insight into
what's in there. And I think for you guys that are listening, it's giving you guys like a little bit of a snippet into what is actually involved. Like you see all these guys, but you don't actually know what the stresses are. But like talking about the stresses, what were some of the when you're in that position and you're having like for me looking at that, that's substantial growth. Like you're year on year or not even year on year because you're moving that fast. It's month on month at that point. You're literally nearly doubling month on month or quarter on quarter. How are you,
So I was 26 at the time. and crazy. But and that's one of the things about Pilgrim is Pilgrim has been built off the same principles that I learned, and I saw that first kind of 8 or 10 years of my career in construction as my apprenticeship. Where I was getting, when I first started that job, I was general manager carrying all this responsibility, getting paid $55,000 a year.
When everyone was assuming that you're making $300,000 a year, this guy just does nothing.
That's right, and I've always thought I'm not entitled to make that money to reap those rewards yet. Down the track, maybe if everything goes to plan and I'm able to build a profitable business, then absolutely the rewards come. But that's part of the journey, and you have to be willing to invest for an extended period. Like you're saying, starting a business, you're not entitled to profit ever. You're not entitled.
It's a fight.
And the secret to building a business is creating an, you have to look at your business like an engine, yeah, like a machine,
yeah,
and it's tweaking the individual parts of it, and hopefully at the end what pops out is a profitable business, right?
Hopefully.
So you have to become the master at business development, the master at finance, the master at operating the engine. Mm. And I think that's part of the challenge is people see business owners and they might be a great carpenter or a great electrician or plasterer or whatever the business is. They might be great at that skill, but it's the variety of skills you have to become astute at.
Mm.
The variety
of so many moving parts, right?
There is, man.
Because like even for me, and this is stuff that I go through on a daily basis. You've got resourcing,
mm-hmm,
client relations, data management, accounts. You've got all these different things that are happening minute by minute, hour by hour. It happens all the time.
Mm.
And I'm very much in my journey right now,
yep,
right? I've had to shift those hats to other people and relinquish responsibility. Mm. You know, accountability is all me.
Sure.
I'm accountable 90% of the time. Like sure. 99% of the time, it's all me.
Yep.
Responsibility, though, you can shift to other people. Mm-hmm. But in order to do that, you have to set clear guidelines and like how, you know,
business. Can we talk about that?
Yeah.
Can we talk about delegation?
Yeah, it's like delegation and like all that sort of stuff. It's such a big thing. Mm. And I think for you, basically being a GM, mm, master at delegation. As you said, you're not a specialist in anything, mm, but you're a fucking master at delegating.
Mm-mm. You and have to know enough to be dangerous on the topic, which you've touched on, but you have to know enough to be able to intervene and be able to understand if someone's bullshitting you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, because you'll get people that will come
absolutely
in at that size business
all
that you're running
your
at 350 homes,
yeah,
right? I could only imagine, mm, you would have got bad eggs 100%. Along that journey.
Yep.
And dealing with that at that point in time, like,
yeah,
how do you, fuck, I could only imagine how, yeah, like you're employing, say, an ops manager or you're employing a project manager, mm, oversee all the supervisors, like, and they don't even know what they're doing. And you're like, yep, fuck, like, and then you're, as you said, you don't have physical construction knowledge.
Yep.
So, I'm talking now real life. I guarantee you, this is what would have happened. A project manager would have gone to you and been like, Caleb, you got no idea, mate. You've never been in construction. The program's going to run out for this, that, and the other. And you're sitting there going, fuck.
Mm.
Like, but then you've still got to be responsible for overall running.
Mm.
So it's like,
mm, yeah,
it's funny, eh? Like, it's such a hard thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think the other thing is you get very good at learning if someone is trying to pull the wool over your eyes.
Yeah.
And that's through asking the right questions.
Mm.
And if something logically isn't adding up, I'm going to keep going and keep going, mm, keep going till it does make sense, mm, to me. Anyway, I think moving on from there, the journey of what I learnt working at Impact, Privium Homes, mm, all of those skills were transferred directly into starting Pilgrim. Mm.
What a good foundation to start.
Yeah, yeah. Amazing. Yeah. And definitely learned a lot of mistakes.
Yeah.
Sorry, made a lot of mistakes during Impact and Privium.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, it's been a new journey.
Yeah.
It's completely different when you're running your own business.
What would you say that the biggest hurdle for you during that period of growth down there was?
Yeah.
If you had to pinpoint it down to one or two things.
Oh, probably my own leadership,
yeah,
and standing in the way. Let me break that down.
Yeah.
I thought I knew.
Yeah.
I thought I knew it all.
Yeah.
One of the things I've come to realize through that and through starting Pilgrim and COVID and all of that is if you think you know it all, you know nothing at all.
Yeah.
And the point there is that you have to walk and lead and work and pioneer humbly, knowing that you don't know it all, and that's okay.
Mm.
But part of your strength comes from your humility and surrounding yourself with amazing people that are technically astute and knowing what you do know and what you don't know,
mm-hmm,
and being able to fill those gaps because of investments you've made in relationships prior, that when you need to, you can pick up the phone and make that call. And that could be the town planner, it could be the engineer, it could be your supplier, it could be a concreter that you met on site 3 years ago.
Mm.
That only comes from planting seeds every day, treating people with respect.
And you learn that relationships are nearly everything.
Relationships are everything.
Yeah.
And it takes a long time to build bridges that have been burnt. So,
yeah. And I think a good thing that I usually use, like, because as you said, you're 20, let's just say mid-20s, all right? You're mid-20s, you're at the top of the thing, you're moving all these pieces. there is a little bit of a point where you have to ride the line between confidence and, arrogance a little bit, like you're stepping on that line a little bit because if you're not confident or not a little bit arrogant to a degree, I know everyone doesn't like using that word, people will see you for who you are, young guy, whatever, they're going to walk straight over you.
That's right.
And you have to almost stand on your two feet. And I think that's where, you know, listening to you talk now, I don't feel like it was a case that you obviously thinking that you knew it all.
Yeah.
But at some point you have to nearly act like you do. Because if you don't, people are going to be like, well, how is he even in the job that he's in?
Yeah. I'm intrigued by the difference between confidence and arrogance.
Yeah.
Maybe there's no difference.
Yeah.
But I think that
I think it's about the difference between confidence and arrogance, because I have this conversation with my wife all the time, right? Because some people, I feel like it's subjective.
Yeah.
And depending on when you are, where you are and who you're with, it can rub off in a different way.
Sure.
Some people look at it as sheer confidence. Yeah. Some people look at it as arrogance. And I feel like it's very subjective on who you are. And as you learn to get better at a leader, you get better at picking those moments on when to be confident and hope that someone doesn't rub off and think that you're arrogant.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And I think proximity, as people get to know you and see you consistently, that it's not an arrogant trait, it's not a chip on your shoulder, it's because you genuinely care, but you're confident in who you are and what you bring to the table.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that rubs people the right way.
So. Yeah. So now you built this massive thing down there. Is it so give us a little bit of thing. So you left it was still running at 350?
Yeah, still running. Another general manager came in. I moved back to Queensland to work in the head office. Throughout that time
– So you went down there for one goal and one goal only to do that?
No, sorry. I was living down there.
Okay.
And I got to know the CEO from Queensland and then got the opportunity, right?
Okay.
So did that. And then I was ready to come back to Queensland. But throughout that process, I was becoming a bit disillusioned with the game of volume building.
Yeah.
No discredit to volume building or volume builders. There's some amazing volume builders out there. But the thing I struggled with, it was kind of cookie cutter, sausage machine, just pump it out and – the reality was this is the most expensive thing that probably clients are ever going to buy.
That's it.
And the process deserves to be treated with respect and excellence and all of those things. So yeah, got over the volume building game and had this dream to start Pilgrim. So that was 1st of March 2020. I started Pilgrim and 15th of March COVID happened. And the whole world shut down.
And every client out there was going, do not come near me.
Yeah.
we'll see you in 6 months.
It was that and it was like, how am I going to get through this? I've just left a pretty decent paying job.
Yeah.
And I started Pilgrim. The way I started is I gave myself 120 grand.
Yeah.
This is going into the depths of it, but it's helpful for people to see
100%.
The scaling process. So just over 5 years ago, started Pilgrim with 120 grand and I paid myself 70 grand.
That you saved up?
Yeah, we'd saved up. We'd done some other developments.
Yeah.
And this was, it wasn't all of our money, but that was the money I put aside.
That you put aside.
The truth was at the start of Pilgrim, I didn't believe I could do it, to be honest. There was a part of me that thought, you know, can you actually do this or not? And I'm sure a lot of your listeners battle that.
Yeah.
And it's an insecurity but it's a normal fear to have if you're thinking about starting a business.
And just I'll let you keep going, but give us a little bit of context of where you were at that stage of your life, married, kids, like what did your life look like at that very point in time? Because a lot of guys, you know, depending on where they're at in their life, that's when they're, you know, they sometimes, it's easy for you to say, you know.
Yeah. I was married with two young kids and another on the way.
Yeah.
I was 31 years old.
Yeah.
Always had a dream in my heart to run a business.
Yeah.
And I always thought I could do it, but was always plagued by insecurity that I probably can't do it.
Yeah,
I had seen both my brother's business fail and a close mentor of mine business fail, and that was just not a nice thing to see and experience.
Yeah.
So I've seen the devastation of what a failed business can do to the personal, like to the person and to their family and the wider network.
Everything.
That's devastating.
Yeah.
So I carried a bit of fear there. At the time, people were saying to me, if you can get through COVID, you can get through anything. So I paid myself 70 grand and I gave myself 50 grand to grow the business. And that's like a website cash and flow, marketing, yep. Cash. I was the only overhead, right? Which is just my wage. And yeah. I've got a photo,
yeah.
photo of me in the spare bedroom at home with the computer set up. And that was
this
is day, yeah, I'll, yeah, I'll get you a copy. Yeah. But that's day one of Pilgrim.
Yeah.
And it was very challenging.
So you had obviously day one,
yeah.
You're there. You've dealt with website, and you soon realize mm-hmm. that's a whole rort as well. Yeah. Because they're just taking your money, SEO, and
yeah.
That's so everything that you learn. Is it? Yeah.
Pilgrim was initially just a developer.
Yeah.
So my plan was I was going to do joint ventures. I'd get some money in, and we would go out to external builders. Mm-hmm. I'd always had a dream of starting a building company.
Mm-hmm.
So about 6 months into the journey, I realized that retail builders were quite expensive at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought I'll just start a building company.
Mm. And prices were going up
at that point in time. They were just starting to.
Yeah.
So I thought I'll just start a building company. I can control costs and grow that into a great business that helps people.
Mm.
Part of the thing, I'd come from Melbourne where there was great design in the kind of medium to high-end space. I thought at the time Queensland really lacked great design
mm-hmm.
in the luxury building space. So I wanted to make a difference there, and it was a business that could sit alongside the development business.
Yeah.
And throughout that process, developed a vision that we can actually have a genuine impact in this luxury home building market in Southeast Queensland.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it's all been rosy, and fast forward 5 years, we've got a great business.
Not so easy, not so easy. No. All right. So
COVID came.
Yeah.
First year of business. I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about this, but first year of business, we made $1 million profit.
Yeah.
Through developments.
Yeah.
Second year of business, I made a $1.3 million loss.
Yeah.
And it was excruciating.
Mm.
Second year, that was where I learned most of the lessons. First year, like I thought I was a rock star.
Yeah. But don't you go through peaks and troughs as well?
Absolutely.
For me, I can just run through P&Ls. All right? I'll go through years. And what's funny is when you're in a sweet spot, mm-hmm. you don't know you're in a sweet spot.
Yeah,
you think that this is how it's always supposed to be.
Yeah.
You're supposed to make money month on month.
You get better at recognizing it.
Yeah.
After you've been through the valleys, right? You start to think, wow, this is a bit of a purple patch we're in right now.
Yeah.
And it feels great.
Yeah.
But then also don't get too confident because there's a challenge.
Just get, eventually, as you go down the path of doing it more and more, you just get level headed. It doesn't, you make some money, you lose some money. It is what it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sweet. So first year you did that. Second year you had a massive loss,
mm-hmm.
right? And you're sheerly doing developments at this point.
No, we're into building at that point.
Okay.
So this was the COVID client builds.
Yeah.
Client builds. Yep.
Yeah. And how you give us a bit of a picture on how that looks. Were they coming through your website? Was this through relationships that you knew, friends, family? How did it all, you know, because a lot of guys there, the first thing they say, and everyone that asks me when they go out there and get their builder's license or whatever is,
how do you get clients? Yeah. So one of the principles I've always worked by is marketing wins.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's the company that markets the best wins, right? Which means, in the way I think about it, look at the highest paid actors in the world historically. They've been The Rock, it's been Will Smith, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Are those guys the best actors? Absolutely not. Are they great at marketing themselves? Absolutely.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. It's like we have this talk all the time mm-hmm. about you line everyone up, right? You line 10 builders, developers up. They're all the best. They're all going to give you the same outcome, same price, same everything. They're all the same. But the trick is, who are you more familiar with? And the only way that you can be familiar with them is who's marketed themselves the best.
Good.
You're going to resonate with that one more, aren't you?
That's good.
And that's who wins.
Yep.
Ultimately, in the world, doesn't matter what industry you're in, that's the harsh reality.
Yeah. Now, there's an integrity side of it,
mm-hmm.
which is you got to be able to practice what you preach
mm-hmm.
and you got to make sure that your systems and your service and all of your quality lines up with the brand that you're putting out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where people come undone is that they sell the sizzle, but then they're not willing to put in the work to back that up.
But they're not around for ages,
They're not around for
You know what
time.
I mean? If businesses that survive and that are good marketers and are around, there's a reason for it.
That's right.
Are they the best at the building? Mm. Probably not.
Mm.
But do they do as good as everyone else? Yes.
Mm. Mm.
And they market.
Yeah.
And they consistently just keep winning. So
it's good.
Yeah. All right, guys, congratulations. You're halfway through this episode. I hope you guys are really enjoying it. But first, I just want to make a special thank you to Ideal Group Australia. Without them, I wouldn't be able to bring this podcast to you. So special thank you. I hope you guys are enjoying it. Buckle in and get ready to listen to the end of this episode.
So to answer your question, how did we get off the ground?
Yeah.
It was marketing. I think we had sold five houses before we'd built one.
Yeah.
Now, I sold with confidence because I know how to run a building company. I know how to build houses.
Mm-hmm.
Do I know how to build houses myself with my own two hands? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want me on a side.
Yeah. So you very much knew the number game at that point.
And the system.
Yeah.
And the system.
So
of
you knew
what,
the system of how it was going to run.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And I look at building like any other company, any other business, but building is a very complex business. Custom building is a very complex business to run.
Mm.
There's over 1,500 different custom items that have to get delivered to site at the right time, 50 or 60 different trades or suppliers, checklists on checklists, and like systems genuinely are what enables us to scale in a healthy way.
Now, the good thing is, guys, you had it all in the Dropbox saved from Melbourne.
Well, that's right. Yeah. But I thought that was volume building.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I thought that was part of the challenge. Yeah. I took what I thought I knew.
Yeah, into the custom game. It wasn't quite the same.
Completely different game, but that's okay.
Yeah. What are you saying? We can't get this house built in 12 weeks.
That's right.
What do you mean?
Just build it. Just build it.
We're here for 2 years. This is unheard of. I would have built 100 homes by now.
Let's go.
Yeah. So what were you doing? So at that point in time, right? Am I going to go to now? Now looks good. You know, now what it is.
Yep.
But in that moment, so were you running more, you were doing subbies, you had agreements. Like, did you have your own carpenters and running teams
at that time?
No.
So to answer the question of why we lost so much in the second year, our first six homes, we lost on average 50 to 70,000 and time frames blew out from 8 months to 12, 14, 15 months throughout COVID. I had scaled up the team, not realizing that was happening. And that was an excruciating time to, you know, growth is never easy, but doing it through COVID and just learning how to manage client relationships and learning how to manage expectations and all of that, that was sleepless nights and tight on cash flow and all of those things. Yeah, so that was our first year, I think we probably built three homes.
And the homes were you were bought, you had like three blocks or 10 blocks, whatever it was, and you picked them, or was it?
No, they were client builds. It was building for developers and a couple of mums and dads. But the marketing, like it was website and it was all of that. And I managed to sign up our first couple of contracts. And then it was about building the engine to build those houses. We had a couple on the go that were our own JVs.
Mm.
So we went from
dealing,
there.
Yeah, and then obviously, you know, dealing with clients that are buying with sheer emotion.
Yeah.
Because, correct me if I'm wrong, down in Melbourne when you're a GM, not saying that it was below, well, centrally it was, you're not dealing with Joanne and David that have bought that house. But now you're in the seat where they're ringing you on a Saturday saying, my roof's leaking.
That's right.
It's your fault.
That's right. And that's what I talk about being the master, like becoming a generalist master of everything as a business owner. A lot of people do a parallel role in a business. Like they might be a project manager or they might be a leading hand chippy or something like that, think they can jump out and start their own business. You definitely can do that.
Mm-hmm.
I've done that. You probably did the same.
Mm-hmm.
But just be aware that there's a whole bunch more skills you got to develop than just what that specific.
Yeah, and I think we're getting off the thing here. But I preach it a lot on here about I never once shame anyone for wanting to start a business. I think business is one of the things, unlike anything else in this world, it'll give you the best upside ever, best lifestyle. It can give you anything and everything that you ever want. But I think what I preach the most on here is up to the guys, the listeners, whoever's taking in the content at the time, is to determine on what avenue they want to go. Because this social media epidemic that we're in, right, I don't like to say epidemic, but this whole game, entrepreneurship, being a business owner is glorified, right? And everyone thinks that they're a failure if they're not an entrepreneur or work for themselves.
Yep.
When the reality is that you do not need to be an entrepreneur or a business owner. You very well can just be a standard Joe Blow, number two, number three, just not even a number two or number three. You might just enjoy going to work every day, getting your paycheck and going on holidays once a year, whatever you want to do.
Yep.
But it's up to the person to determine what they want and be okay with that.
Yep.
And I think don't let yourself get suckered in to this false sense of reality that you're a failure because you're not a business owner. You're not doing $1 million a year or you're not doing this and not doing that. Like, hey, you don't need to. Awesome. You don't need to. Like, as you've just said, you made $1 million, you lost $1.5 million or you had all the challenges. Like, you're doing it for another motive. It's you.
Yep.
Like, and that's what I mean. For me. It's what's inside me. I enjoy it. Mm-hmm. As much as I like to make a dollar here and there, but as I said to you off camera before, if I put $150 million in my account, I'd go to Croatia and I'd probably sit on the beach for 3 months. And then after that, I'd be bugging the shit out of my wife saying, what can I get into? I need to stress out about something.
Yeah.
Because that's me. Yeah. That's me. It's like that. It's all about the person. It's not so much about, you know, the money and all that sort of stuff. So that's all I'm saying.
It's great.
Right. It's just for the listeners and that, it's just about having the honest talk about yourself and what you want. Because I've got a couple of really good guys that work for me, right? Probably better carpenters than me, would run better teams than me.
Yep.
But they've realized that they've seen me have the stress that I've had and they don't want that.
Yep.
And they're happy with that.
Yep.
And that's fine. And they're probably going to make just as much money, if not more than me, over the course of their career with less stress.
And annual leave.
Annual leave. That's a fucking fabulous thing, isn't it?
Public holidays.
Public holidays, this, that, and the other. Like, hey, throw your phone in the bin Friday afternoon. Yeah. But that's fine. Yeah, that's fine. That's what they want. And they're mature enough that they've said that to me. They're like, I don't want it. You know what I mean? It's all for you, mate. You go and do it. It's up to you.
The other thing I'd say to young guys that aspire to get into business is don't rush it or wish for it too soon. One of the great positions young guys are in if they're in a role where they're getting paid is that they're getting paid to learn the lessons that if they jump out on their own, they're going to have to learn all those lessons by themselves and have to pay for it themselves.
Yeah.
So the best advice I could give is find a company where you can grow in for a period and get all of those skills together. Mm-hmm. And then eventually when the time is right, make the call to step out. The other way to do it, which is a more honorable way to do it from my perspective, is have the conversation with your boss, which aligns with that.
That's
saying,
exactly right.
Hey, boss, for the next 3 years, I'm committed. I want opportunities though. I want to learn and grow and stretch and whatever, but my long-term plan is I want to step out. Mm. So then you're going to get exposed and you're going to get more responsibility.
And guess what that happens, guys? If you actually have the balls to say that to your employer, first of all, they're going to respect it. Mm-hmm. Second of all, they're going to put you in situations to absolutely test you like you've never been tested before. Mm-hmm. And the lesson that they're going to say to you is they're going to turn to you and be like, this is what you're going to go through when you're on your own.
That's right. If you want to do it.
That's exactly right. Like, I've had guys come through here and the first thing they'll say to me is like, mate, I want to go out there and run my own construction company when I'm done. No worries.
Yep.
Then when performance reviews and stuff come around, I say to them, listen, man, if you can't get this aspect down pat, you got no hope if you're going out on your own. And I give him the harsh truth because I say to him, and then I refer back to him. I pull back the thing and I say, listen, you're the one that told me that you want to go out there and work for yourself. Mm. If you want to do that still, let me know. Yeah, I do. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, buckle up then because it's not easy, dude.
That's right.
And I'm gonna give you the lessons that you need now.
It's good.
So when it happens later down the track, you're going to look back on me. Mm-hmm. And I say that in like 10 years, you're going to be like, that guy fucking told me that da 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 da. And you're going to be thankful that happened. Because for me, I didn't get that. I had to learn and pay for my lessons at the same time. Mm. You know, I'd pay blood, sweat and tears and finances and all the rest of it.
Right.
There was nothing. Yeah. And and that's why I do what I do and all good, that man. Sort of stuff. But
love
anyway,
it.
All
right. Love it.
So you're 2 years in, you got your clients, you've had that massive loss.
Yep.
What was then the shit? Are you still going through COVID at this point?
Yeah, we're
back end of COVID.
We'd be through by that point, we'd be mid-COVID.
Yeah.
I mean, COVID, the impact on the building industry was really years. It was two years. Yeah. And it was from the full impact was from late 2020.
Yeah. Even in 2022, people have been like, oh, sorry, COVID delays.
That's right. It's COVID delays and cost increases. And what are we now, 25? It was late 23 when things started to normalize. You know, we could trade started to, you know, come back to the table a bit. And suppliers were a lot more open. I remember one day I had, there was trusses turning up to site, one of our suppliers. They were not doing fixed price frames or trusses, right?
Yeah.
So on the day we had a quote. And then on the day, there's a $13,000 price increase. And I wasn't smart enough at the time to have my to have all my contracts tidied up with, you know, all the proper provisional sums and all of those things that we now have. $13,000 like on the spot. And they're like, sorry, do you want the delivery or not? I'm like, well,
I don't have a choice.
I don't have a choice. I've got to take it.
Yeah.
And it was hit after hit with that through the process.
Yeah. And you have to take that. You have to. And I got a lot of mates that are builders and developers, right? And I've had guys open and honest with me. They run very established companies, and they're even honest with me now, saying that it has taken them up until now.
Yep.
They're doing contracts now. That is now going to be able to swing them the other way, because everything prior to now, right now, we're 2025, nearly mid 2025.
Yep.
Everything prior to now has been basically recouping losses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have to refinance houses,
draw
more equity. Like, it seems all grand. Yeah, they still got paid and that everyone was still, the business is still turning.
Mm-hmm.
But behind closed doors, a lot of these guys, they were still recouping costs of projects that they signed after the fact. Because, yeah, during that period, hey, everyone had, no one was thinking about all these different clauses and contracts, and no, it wasn't a massive thing back then.
Mm.
Everyone was just, yeah, sign, yeah, one and done, it's great. Mm. But then guess what? Bam, bam, inflation. Yep. Subbies prices went through the roof. You couldn't get a single person. I remember in 2023, it was the hardest time.
Yep.
I couldn't get a single soul, right? It was very much an employee market. Name your price, right? I was getting guys coming in, mate, you don't give me $80 plus a fuel card, I'm not coming. Yep. You had no choice. There was no one around. Then it started to shift a little bit.
Yeah.
Right? And even now it's, you know, shifting a little bit again. But
a lot of builders came undone during that time.
Yeah.
And they're great business people and had built great businesses, but they had sold their contracts at a fixed price and their cost price going up the whole time.
And what do you do in that point? Do you go to the client and say, hey, listen, I fucked up.
Yeah.
We need a variation.
Didn't see this coming. Some people did. I wasn't smart enough at the time to do that.
But that's the thing, and it comes down to relationship.
Yeah.
How much is that relationship worth?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And how, you know, I had a guy sit here a few weeks back and he said he had to do it, but the only reason why he had to do it is because if he didn't do it, it would have taken him out of business. And he told that to the client. The client didn't come to the full party, nor did they have to.
Yep.
Right? Because he had the fucking contract there. They said, mate, listen, I don't have to do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But they understood.
Yeah.
And, but, as he told me, that relationship now,
that's right.
They've done about fucking $10 million worth of work past that.
Yep.
So it's like for him, it was a relationship play. And that's what we're reverting back now to the very first thing that we said. It's all about relationship. And over that period when you were making your decision up on whether or not to do it, you've just started, you're a brand new company. Do you want to tarnish your relationship with everyone that is giving you the trust to do their build? And then you're going back to them and saying, hey, by the way, I need an extra $300,000 out of you. An extra $250,000 out of you, da da da. And they're like, fuck, what the fuck?
Yeah. It goes on to another point though, which is a big lesson I've learned, is that you cannot keep everyone happy through the process. And it's just we put a lot of pressure on ourselves as business owners to keep everyone happy. And it's from our staff to our suppliers and our clients and everyone. But the reality of growing something of significance throughout that process is you're going to end up in certain seasons or, you know, time zones where you are overstretched and you got yourself into a position where you're stressed up to your eyeballs and all of that, and you will drop balls.
Yeah.
And I think one of my main messages to young business owners is that's okay.
Mm.
And that's part of the journey of growing something of significance. And it's part of our learning journey. It's not okay to stay there. That's the warning signs to slow down and get things under control.
And I think I was talking to a guy, runs a different business, but he rang me yesterday afternoon and talking about the ball analogy, right? Being able to drop balls. I look at it like this. When, as a business owner, or you're just starting out in business, you get absolutely inundated with everything, work, life, you name it, right? I honestly, hand on heart, believe that only running a business, a substantial business to a degree, right? If you're just doing a mum and dad pop-up shop, it's no real drive, like whatever. But a substantial thing, you're trying to grow it, it is the hardest thing to do because business is designed for you to fail, right? It's not designed for you to win. It is literally designed for you to fail, right? Because if it was designed to win, everyone would do it.
That's right.
And it's the fucking hardest thing you'll ever do.
Yep.
And I remember saying to this guy yesterday that the way I look at it is when you get a lot on your plate, just shelf something, right? Just put everything up on the shelf that you...
Yeah.
It's not that you're not going to get to it,
yeah.
Right? You communicate. if you've got a partner, a wife or kids, they come first.
Yep.
I'll never go backwards on that. My wife, my kids, they're going above everything. It's don't care about the business. I don't care about any of that. They come first, right? Everything outside of that, if I miss a meeting, if a client's blowing his lid at me, if I got defects here, I got the QBCC on my ass, I got this, that and the other, deal with it another day, mate. Put it on the thing. Mm. Like, it's easier said than done though. Being in the position that I am and going through what I've gone through previously, I've learned to do that.
Yeah.
But at the early days, you can get so strung up on trying to do everything that you think that if you don't, it's going to all come crashing down. But I think as you mature and you got exposed to something that was great down there, you learned that obviously, you know, if you don't get it all, it's fine.
Yeah, and you can't be complacent in the balls that you're dropping, and that's part of the responsibility, again, an integrity thing, that you're the one that's grown the business, right? Mm. You're the one that's been the pilot or the captain of the ship that's taken it there, but everything that you're facing today is because of decisions you've made.
Mm.
So don't you dare feel like a victim, right? Don't you dare feel bad because this person's coming at you. You've created that situation. Yeah. No one else has created that.
Yeah.
But sometimes mental health and all that, it's okay to let that drop.
Mm.
Communicate it as best you can. Do your best to carry it.
Mm.
But then also you got to keep improving and getting better.
That's
systems and resource and all. You're not staying there with not being able to carry it. You're going to keep moving forward and learn how to carry it better.
Yeah.
But for that moment, it's okay.
Mm. And I think that's what I mean about it. It's the person.
Yeah. Right?
Because when your balls are to the wall, you got nothing else. It's, it all comes down to you, dude. I've been my bed. On the edge of my bed, fucking in cold sweats.
Yep.
Just like, you got a massive bill there. The ATO's on your ass. Like, fuck, like, what are you going to do? I don't know.
Yeah.
But like, hats off to my wife. Like,
huge.
You know, she obviously, oh man.
Yep.
She fucking obviously, like, she's the sounding board and be able to like do everything. Like, I just say things to her and she's just like, oh, you know, it's all good. Like, the sun's going to come up tomorrow. Yeah. Like,
can I just give a little shout out to the wives for a second?
Yeah. Oh,
so, but part of the journey,
consulting at the best.
Yes. Yeah. And the backstop and the biggest fan and all of that behind and picking up the balls that you do drop at home. I think the lesson there is if you are going on this journey as a business owner, you got to have a life partner beside you. If you have a life partner, you got to have a partner beside you that is willing to go on that journey with you, because it is stretching and there's times, you know, there's
if you're
times
going solo, you're not there. Let me just say, if you guys are going solo,
yeah, going solo, but also having someone that's fighting against you.
Yeah.
Like that's a team sport running a business and having your partner there with you.
Mm.
On the journey and being your biggest fan, if they're fighting against you the whole time, it's a big challenge.
I think you have to have that. The biggest talk that I had to Mara at the start was what I wanted to do, but where I wanted to go.
It's awesome.
Right? Yeah. Because without me saying where I wanted to go. Yeah, exactly. She needed to know, has it moved? Has it shifted? Has it gone faster or slower? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
But she still knows the big picture on what I want.
And we have to be fair on that as life partners. We have to be fair. We can take the piss.
Yeah.
And we can work all the time and prioritize all of that. But there's consequences of that as well. It's not easy to balance.
Yeah.
And then there's a lot of grace given both ways, but you have to be aware of it and not,
And I made the big decision, like, some people run the model of like they're both in the business and then they're both like equal parts.
Yeah.
I ran the decision. Well, we both made the decision that I would run the business and she would run home.
That's big.
But she she is obviously very trusting with what I'm doing and she gives me that responsibility. Like Tamara doesn't work, like she's employed by the business and stuff, but it's
what does she do?
Cut. She is my consultant.
She is your consultant and she gets
the
paid
most,
well.
She's the most cheapest consultant with the things that I go through her with. ATO. You know what I mean? I go to her and I consult with her on the couch and they are where all the big decisions get made.
That's right.
But
board member.
Yeah. Legit, man. And that's what I joke. I joke around with that to her because she always says to me, oh, but I do not. I'm like, but you don't understand.
Oh, it's huge.
When I go, she doesn't know all the ins and outs. She doesn't know who's getting employed, who's doing a fucking trial, who's taking us to this, she doesn't know about any of that. She doesn't need to, right? But when I go home and I say to her like, hey, listen,
this is what I'm going
I've got
through.
A fucking 80 or 100 grand bill.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do?
Mm-hmm.
They're the decisions that I don't go to anyone else with.
Sure.
It's right. Good. And then she would then sit me down, first of all, decompress me to take me off the fucking edge, and then say, okay, well, what are our options? And we'd lay it all out.
Mm.
It might only happen once a month or once every 3 months or maybe once a week. But whenever those moments happen, it's literally without that.
Yep.
You know, because everyone's got different people. Everyone's got, you know, they might have parents and this, that, and the other. Mm-hmm. I don't have that. Mm-hmm. So for her, that's her role with me. And yeah, so I always joke to her. She's always like, I'm like, you don't understand. If I come to you with a thing, it's like the most important thing at that point in time. But yes, definitely. If you guys have got partners or wives or girlfriends or whatever it is, communicate, mm-hmm. and come up with a clear plan on what you guys want to do, right? And talk about it. Yep. Because as you just said, if you don't have that, it'll unravel very, very fucking quick.
Yeah.
And it will stretch you. My
wife has resigned, I think, 4 or 5 times from Pilgrim. And I keep trying to bring it back in.
Yeah.
But I think it's like, if you want to grow and scale your business, that partner dynamic is something that's important to consider. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy. So, all right. So, you went through that period. Mm-hmm. You went through COVID and then now.
Yep.
So, you guys, what does Pilgrim look like now?
Yeah. Before I go there,
yeah.
I just want to echo what you said about the ups and downs, peaks and troughs.
Yeah, let's do it.
So, part of the concept of the word pilgrim is that life's a journey.
I was actually going to get to that. I was going to say, why pilgrim? No, that's all right.
Do you mind if I go there?
Yeah, go.
Yeah, cool.
Go.
So, the concept of pilgrim is that life's a journey full of ups and downs.
Yeah.
And the beauty and richness of life is actually on the mountains and in the valleys.
Yeah.
And we can't have the mountains without the valleys.
Mm-hmm.
It's all par for the course, which is what I was saying about if we're walking through tough times, we have to expect it and we can't be surprised by it or entitled not to go through those.
Mm-hmm.
But the concept and the vision is that we play such a critical part in our clients' life journeys.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably the biggest thing they're ever going to buy. And it's where they're going to make memories and build legacy together long term.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to take them on a journey that's a rich and challenging and exciting and all of that complex journey. We know this is a really hard journey to go through and we want to partner with them and go along that journey, but ultimately realizing the part we play in their bigger life story.
Yeah.
So that's the idea of Pilgrim. Now, we've built nearly 35 custom luxury homes. We put our first slab down just under 4 years ago.
Yeah.
We've
Good
got
job.
A team of
all
15
in Brisbane.
In Southeast Queensland. Yep. Yeah. So Brisbane, a little bit of Gold Coast.
Yeah, okay, sweet.
We're having an impact on the custom building market in Southeast Queensland. There's some great builders.
Yeah.
And we see ourselves as sitting alongside them.
Mm-hmm.
Our goal is to be the benchmark in custom luxury building in Southeast Queensland. Ideally within 3 years, I want to be doing kind of 25 a year.
Mm-hmm.
But sitting in that space of 1.2 to 3 million, $3.5 million builds, like that spot there.
Is your sort of sweet spot.
That's our sweet spot.
Yeah.
We got a great.
And all B2C, like all client.
Yeah. All client builds.
Yeah.
We do a bit of development as well.
Yeah.
I do kind of
four to six
projects a year.
Yeah.
And they'll be like knockdown rebuilds or splitters. So it's grown into a healthy business. I've just hired a general manager.
Yep.
I've got a construction manager, an operations manager. I've got project managers, estimators, offshore estimators as well, which has been fun. But it's all systems and scale and vision, and I'm doing that with the principles that I learned at Impact Privium.
Yeah.
I had a great, fantastic mentor there. And my goal was always to bring the epic systems from volume building, bring it into custom building, and create a really healthy machine.
Because you can streamline it
to
a degree.
You can absolutely streamline it. Absolutely.
And it's, I'm going to talk to this on the surface level. We'll go back to you, but I'm going to talk surface level now to the tradies.
Yep.
I'm a full believer that if you're a spark, you're a plumber or a chippy or whatever, I feel like there is a lot to be learned in the volume game. Mm-hmm. Everyone shits on it, right? But let me tell you, I've had guys that I've employed that have come from volume stuff and that have gone into custom.
Yep.
Yes, they might not know all the intricate things of custom, but let me tell you, the one thing that they're fucking good at that I can't teach is efficiency.
Yep.
They get on there, they're efficient with their time, they're thinking about time, they're pumping, they're moving, they're getting this, they're getting that, and they think, but to get a guy to go from custom to then go into a volume or when you need speed, good luck.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And
yeah,
I think
I do.
The same sort of principle is, yes, I know you're saying that it doesn't relate, it's a different thing, it 100% is, right? 100%.
Sure.
but a lot of things you can take from and be like, okay, like, yes, that's not going to apply for now custom, but hey, if these guys are doing, I'm going to work out a way to fucking streamline this so you can do 25 and not rip your fucking hair out and you can still sit on the beach and do whatever.
Yeah. If we're talking about a trade business, I wonder if there's more margin in running a volume-focused trade, like let's say electrical, residential, volume-focused business or a custom-focused business.
There's, we could talk for about 3 hours about this, right? Because I've got-
I'm not an expert on it.
No, it is. So it really, like for us, we've come, so I was a builder. 2017, I got my builder's license. True. I built, so I didn't tell anyone, like I didn't start on that, but back in the day, I was very much a builder. We were doing contracts around about that 1.2, all client-based, realized that it wasn't really my thing. So my guys, some of my guys that are even still here now today, we started in that space. I then got out of that space, went maintenance, got out of maintenance, went to volume, got out of volume, went back to custom, then realized that I didn't really like custom and then went back to multi-res. Sure. So I've been in nearly every single little category for a trade-based business that I'm not talking about being a builder. Trade-based business. For me, scale-wise, volume is better. That's just what I've learned. If you like the intricate sort of stuff and you like to be part of that and it's more your flavor, 100%. Custom all the way, little bits and pieces here, there and there, but then, but definitely the volume game, I think there is more to be made. But at the same time, you're risking a lot more.
I hope my trades aren't listening right now, but it is interesting. Yeah. Like it's all systemizing. And then it's also what you want to do.
Yeah.
Like, do you want to do just bang it out every day?
Well, that's what I mean.
Or do you want stuff that you can be creative with and be proud of? And
I guess that comes down to the person as well. For me, I like business. All right. What do I like? You know, do I like the look of townhouses that we build? Maybe some of them. Does it give me some sort of kick at the end? Yeah. When I see people living in it, it could be a fucking cardboard box on the street. Someone's living in it. It gives me some sort of pride. Sure. But the pride for me is more about the business that I built.
Yeah.
Do people like working for us?
It's great.
Do we have good processes and procedures? Are we a fun company to work for? Are we profitable? Like, is there sort of like a, can I grow with within, giving people more opportunity? That is what is the real kicker for me, where I know like a lot of guys, they run companies that, you know, the kicker for them is the beautiful house. And like, I get that. But that just for me, that wasn't the path that I went. So
I think the other thing is people having a clear vision of the type of business they want to build.
Exactly,
Like, do they want to scale it? If we're just talking to builders, is it better for you to build one or two species a year? Or is it better for you to build 5 or 10 for clients? Or do you want to scale it? And do you want to do 20 or 30?
Exactly.
For me, it was always about having the building a great business that has a significant impact, positive impact on a large group of people. That's what, like, and it's for me, it's always bigger, more, whatever.
Because you come, like, don't forget,
when you're going
quarter on quarter and it's growth on growth, like, fuck, you
and
have
I find
to.
It I find it exciting. Yeah. Like, for me, if we're going to do it, let's give it a crack and let's make it big, but that's let's make it excellent in the process, which is great design, great branding, great team, all of that stuff, great systems. Because if we're doing anything half-assed, that's going to tick me right off. But that's not the best for everyone. No. Like, there's great builders out there that build 2 a year, and sometimes I'm jealous of those guys. Yeah. I wouldn't.
But that comes down to the same thing that we were talking about earlier about the person.
Yeah.
Whether you decide to be a business owner or you don't. Yep. And once you're a business owner, what sort of business do you want to run?
Yep.
Do you want to just do something that is the cruisy as 1 or 2 a year? You're on the tools half the week. You get to have a laugh with the boys and the other half a week with the kids.
That's right.
Or do you want to go balls to the wall, scale up and risk it all and build something massive?
Yeah.
You know, it's...
So the other point that I've fought a lot through the years is the comparison game.
I was literally going to touch on that.
Sorry, man.
We're about to come towards the end and I was about to ask that to you because...
Yeah.
The comparison game,
it's huge
in building,
toxic.
And, you know, Southeast Queensland, right?
Yeah.
For you guys that aren't in Southeast Queensland, you, mate, let me tell you, some of the best builders in Australia, most I would say, expert marketers and aesthetically pleasing. It's a very big game of comparison in Brisbane. How have you been able to?
Yeah, so I've actively fought against that. I've got great relationships with I don't know, probably 20 or 30 other builders in Southeast Queensland and their relationships that I've sought out. And like, we will message each other on the daily. What are you paying for Sparkies? What are you paying for painters? You know, do you need fill? All those questions.
Yeah.
But personally, I just was, I found that that ate me up inside, this comparing, like, why can't I be as good or as big or as whatever as that builder? Even the whole time we were achieving great success and kicking goals, but still battling that internally. Yeah. And where I got to was actually, no, like, I'm running my own race. And when you're playing comparison, it's, you can't ever compare apples for apples. Who knows what money they had backing them, or, you know, what their experience was or whatever. So my thing is, do my best every single day with what I've got. That's the only comparison I'm making. Show up every day and be diligent. And that's how I protect my mental health. And it you know, we're doing
it.
But
it's hard to go through, isn't it?
It is hard. Like, you have to battle.
Guys that start out in business, you'd be fucking lying to yourself if you didn't compare yourself to anyone. Mate, I compared myself, like, not so much now, but because I've proven to myself that I am good, like, I can do something, but very much in the early days, I would compare myself to everyone. I'd be like, how?
Yep.
You know, how did they get that? Why are they winning those clients? How do they get those builds? How do they, you know, and you'd be sitting there, you'd be like, fuck, must be easy. Like, and you get so, but now being mature and, you know, two kids, 30, like, it's, I sit back now and I go, you know, different, they might have been a different stage of their life.
Yep.
You know, they might have had it this, that, and the other. Some people didn't have kids and they went solo and they can do that. You know, for me, I had a little bit more responsibility.
Yep.
It was just a different stage of my life and what I was comfortable doing. And I think,
but there'll always be someone better than you.
Yeah.
Like, just always. It's just a reality, right? Yeah. There's always going to be someone that builds faster, or, you know, maybe builds higher quality, or grows a business quicker, or there's always going to be someone better than you. That's the reality of the game that we play in. And you got to get comfortable with that. Stay in your lane. Be diligent with what you can.
And just do your best every day.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And
that's it.
And that's all you can do.
Yeah.
Like, this is going to sound so wooey, right?
Yeah.
But I always say to everyone, the only thing that I can ever control in my life is what I drink and what I eat.
Sure.
That's it.
True.
If you look at it as a fucking nutshell, like, life is in general, business, family, personal, whatever it is. The only two things that you can ever control is what you put in your mouth. That's it. What you drink and what you eat. Cool. Everything else, all external, what this builder's doing, what this client's doing, what this fucking employee's doing, are we getting paid? That's all just fucking, like, you can't control that. And I think once you realize that you can't control it and just go with the motion and be like, okay, I'm going to deal with that now. I'm going to manage this. I'm going to, you know, delegate that. And, you know, that's it.
Yep.
That's the life that we play as business owners. And it's like, you can get like, fuck, man, I used to get so wrapped up in comparison.
Toxic.
Oh, look at those renders. How did they even get those renders? Like, they must have like a firm of like people doing renders, and they're like, this thing is like literally Xbox quality. Look at this thing.
Yeah.
Like, and then you go to the architect and you say, hey, man, this guy, he's got these renders. How, like, I want them.
Yeah.
They're going to cost you, it's going to cost you 10 grand for me to do
that. They have spent that.
That's what I mean.
They've
though.
Spent the money.
And like, that's something that I had to go through to learn that. Oh, well, you can't, they're not, that's not just normal.
Yep.
Maybe they have actually got someone that works in there that was an ex-gaming designer or something like that, and they're just creating these beautiful things and,
Good, mate. I like it. I like
but
it
you wouldn't, like, you know what I mean, eh? Like, you literally, you understand. That's,
oh, but on any, everyone on goes any topic. Yeah. And that's why social media is so challenging. Like, it's fantastic because it's inspiring, but then also it's toxic.
It's a tool.
Because I don't know if you find it, but and not so much these days, but early days, you'd get on there and scroll, and then you'd start to get all those feelings inside you, and it just makes you feel terrible.
Yeah.
Like, just get it away.
It's a tool to be used, and that's how I look at it these days.
Yeah.
Is I use social media as a tool, and that's all it is.
That's right.
All right. But I could go down the rabbit hole of, you know, empathizing with apprentices and like this current day age with TikTok and all that and drop shipping, but I'm not going to do that. You guys have probably listened to that 1,000 times over.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's a whole different world as well. And, you know, I do emphasize with the younger community. I'm talking 17-year-olds now. And, you know, I'm not going to go down the path of like why we've had apprenticeship losses and stuff. But anyway, oi, I want to thank you again, man.
Mate,
we have
it's been fantastic.
This has nearly been an hour.
Yep.
And Yeah, man, I want to thank you.
Thanks
like
for
genuinely,
me.
It's been good. Yep. I know it seems like it goes like that. It always does.
Yeah.
It goes very fast when we start talking, but I hope the listeners anyway have got something out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been really good to obviously talk to someone that's, you know, come from such a massive background to now doing what you do now. Mm. And I hope nothing but the best. And
thank you, mate.
Hopefully we can, you know, run this back in a few years' time. And I bet you anyway, guys, knowing this guy, it won't be 25, it'll be 250. You watch. He'll be like, oh yeah, nah. We want to do 50 homes now. Yeah.
All right. No, so, I appreciate it, man.
All right, man. Thank you again. And we'll see you on the next one.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to this week's episode. If something hit home for you, it would mean the absolute world to us if you could like and share this podcast with someone else that would benefit from it. Tune into next week's episode as this will be one that you don't want to miss.